Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
Oh, hello, I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! I'm back!
Boo!
Yes. Oh, charming. That's nice, isn't it? What a welcome. Yes, I am back, ladies and gentlemen. I had a lovely holiday. Thanks for asking. And yes, it's been lovely and beautiful and calm and all those things. And I haven't had to deal with these two.
Oh.
For the past week, which has been joyous.
We were going to say exactly the same thing. It's been lovely and peaceful and calm, and now he's back.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yes, Sean Preece is here. Hello, Sean Preece.
Hello, Stephen Scott. Gorgeous to have you back as ever.
Lies. Tim Schwartz is here. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Stephen. Welcome back.
Thank you. At least you didn't lie. Right, okay. So we've got lots to get through over the next hour because, well, I am back and that means it's time to talk about things I want to talk about. I'm only kidding.
He's not.
I'm only kidding.
No.
A little bit. Right, we've got lots of news to get through. I can't believe we found a microwave that might actually be accessible. I mean, other than the talking one, obviously. But yeah, I'm quite excited about this. We're going to be talking about a microwave that will cook the food for you. I mean, I know that's what microwave... I'm not really sure I'm selling this well. But this is a microwave, which is accessible to you if you're blind. Although it's not for blind people, it's for everybody. We'll see how that goes.
You made that perfectly clear.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's back.
So basically, it's a microwave. Right, so we're going to be... I'm glad I don't sell these things. So that's coming up. And also, we're going to be finding out what's in the emails this week. I have to tell you, there is a truckload of emails, partly because Sean and Tim were not given the exclusive access that I have to the Tech Talk mailbox last week. Sorry, guys.
No, obviously, we don't have the pay grade to get access to the inbox. I was disgusted, Tim.
I'm right there with you. It's absolutely disgusting.
But we couldn't have read them out either way.
So that's all to come, and some big news for an app we all use. That's coming up in just a second. It is nice to be back, though, among you all. You know, it's nice to be here talking about technology again because, you know, my wife will listen to me so much, but she gets bored of me very quickly, as do most people.
No, actually, yeah, fails.
That's why the show's only an hour.
And that's when you're not talking about technology.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did buy myself one piece of tech when I was away.
Of course.
I was on a cruise ship, right? So I'm on a cruise, and I managed to find... two places on the cruise ship to buy tech. I was quite excited by this. The first place was a watch shop, and you think, really, watches? Okay. Mm. And the second thing was a camera shop. They were selling like tripods and flashes for cameras, but for smartphones. So you could buy like a camera light, and you could buy stuff. Anyway, I didn't spend too long there, but the watch shop I did have a bit of interest in, though, because I had this thing about wanting a new watch, but I wanted to try Android watches. Okay, so here's the thing. Android and iPhone, I don't think, play the best together. I don't think they're the best friends at school.
Not usually.
So the guy who was selling the Android watches, it was by a company called Fossil, he basically suggested that these watches did not play well with iPhones as much as they would obviously be better with Android. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah. I think if it's an Android phone, it works best with an Android watch.
Yeah.
Or reverse that. You know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I know what you mean. I know what you're attempting to say. It's a good job I'm back. So I decided instead to opt for something different, which was a hybrid smartwatch. And this is, it's called a Fossil Q, and they brought out this range of watches, different styles, different types, and you could spend a lot of money buying each different type if you wanted. If you're a guy or a woman, you can buy different ones. There's loads of different styles. Some of them let you change the bands. I don't think the one I got did, rip off, but I like this watch. It's a very large-faced watch. The background is grey or dark grey. It's called a smoke grey. And it's the hands are white. And I can see them. I actually can see them. I can't tell you any of the numbers or the detail or anything else on the watch, but I can see the hands. And because I know how time works, I can get by.
Yes.
So I like it because it's got this hybrid smartwatch feature in it, which basically means it has a normal everyday face, looks like a normal watch, it's mechanical, but behind the scenes there are trackers and sensors in there that track your steps and your calories, even a sleep counter as well. You can customise the buttons so they can control your phone, like playing, pausing music. You can change the time zone by pressing a button and it will just move the hands around to what the time is. It'll even tell you when there's a text coming through by moving all the hands on the watch to the number one or the number two, however you design it, because you can choose all that in the app. I will say one thing, though. The app is terribly inaccessible, so it's not great. I've contacted Fossil about that, and hopefully I will get a response, but it's not amazing at the moment. So if you've got a bit of vision and you can use like Zoom on your phone, then you probably find this quite useful. And the watch is quite good. And the one final thing I will say about it, which I this kind of sold it to me, was that it needs no charging at all. You don't charge this thing. It's got a normal watch battery, and if when the watch battery dies, you get 2 years or so out of it, then you go get a new battery. That's pretty nice.
That is impressive, because I'm assuming all the music controls and those buttons on it use Bluetooth.
They do, yeah.
So the fact that it doesn't need charging, because that's the one thing of a smartwatch, all that charging it every night, it's not for me.
It is definitely a nice feature to have a regular watch battery in there that you're going to get that amount of time out of. And being hybrid, like you said, you know, with some vision, this definitely can be appealing for someone who can see the clock face and use some of those other features at the same time as having a smartphone functionality with an app, although it's unfortunate that the app isn't more accessible.
Yeah, that's a bit disappointing, and that's putting it mildly. So I couldn't use it with VoiceOver, so I had to switch on Zoom to do it.
Terrible.
Yeah, that's not great. That's really not great. But as I say, I've been in touch with Fossil. It's not that we excuse this, because we shouldn't and we won't. But, you know, it's almost expected, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right. You do. With something like a designer brand, you don't expect them to even consider accessibility. And maybe that's on us. Maybe we should bring them to account on it.
But that's because people think that we can't see anything at all. If you're blind, you can see nothing. It's that old myth again.
Yeah.
So there you go. So I got a watch. Anyway, that's my story.
top news, watch. He's got a watch. But you see, a hybrid, is it a case of, because we know you don't really get on, well, maybe you just don't get the full use out of the Apple Watch. Is it the best of both worlds with a hybrid, or is it just both are terrible experiences because it's neither an analog watch or a smartwatch?
I like the analog thing because I kind of just bought this, if I'm honest, because I wanted a nice watch to go out and wear rather than every day. I didn't expect to use it every day. And I might not continue to do that. That's the whole thing. I mean, I have got choice in this world. So I now can stick on my Apple Watch for a while. And, you know, I mean, you've got to be careful because obviously this one isn't waterproof and all of that stuff. So I've got to be conscious of that. But no, I don't think the experience on the Apple Watch is awful. I just don't get the best out of it. I think partly because I should have bought the larger face, which would have been better because I have large fingers.
I've got small hands, if you're interested.
But fat fingers, yeah.
Abuse, unbelievable.
That's an unfortunate image.
Wow.
Doesn't take long to get back into the swing,
no,
does it?
No, it doesn't.
But I like the Apple Watch. I do. I just, I don't get as much out of it as I would like to. Tim, I know you're a big fan of it. You seem to get more out of it than I ever do.
Yeah, I really enjoy the Apple Watch experience. I force myself, well, at least in the beginning, I force myself to try and use it, keep my phone in my pocket and do as much as I could on the watch. And I found that that's a very nice experience. If I want to take care of a notification, I can. If I want to send a message or check, you know, anything else, I can do that really quickly and don't have to pull out my phone. Activity tracking is really good. And that's the other thing is, if you're only using one or two features of an Apple Watch, it may not feel like it's doing enough. That's kind of the trick with the Apple Watch is there's not one killer feature for everyone in the watch necessarily. Mm. There's a lot of really great individual features. And if you're only using one or two of them, it may not feel like the right experience. But if you are finding that you can use many of those different features, then I think that helps the experience quite a bit.
Yeah, if you're using this as a talking watch, you're wasting your money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you could, I mean, you could spend the money on it. It's a nice looking watch. I don't think it's a nice dressy watch. You know, I think if you want to go out for a nice night, something like what I got here with the Fossil Q, it's a nice going out watch. It's something you would put on with a nice shirt or something rather than, you know, your everyday with the Apple Watch. That's how I tend to find it. I like the Apple Watch, I do, but I just, you know, has its moments.
I've switched out the bands on mine. I've been able to pick up some good, inexpensive third-party bands because the Apple bands are so expensive. But the third-party bands aren't that bad. And I've got a couple that are fairly dressy and make it look a little nicer than just the, you know, black or white silicone bands that come with it. So you can dress it up a little bit. It may not be as dressy as, you know, like what you've got with the Fossil watch where it's made to be a little bit more dressy, but you can dress them up just a bit.
Do you know the one I really like? The band they brought out, Apple brought it out for Pride Month. And it's a really bright, colourful band. I just love it. I think that is a brilliant idea. And that, again, it does change the personality of the watch a bit. Anyway, look, I'm not going to talk about watches all day because I'll bore you all to tears and bore myself to tears at that. I do want to talk, though, about an app that has been in the social media sphere recently. We've talked about it a lot on the show, but the reason I bring it up is because it's won an award last week. I think round of applause for Be My Eyes.
Hey! Yay! Well done. Well round done. Well applause. Deserved.
Very well deserved, actually, because this is an app, for those who've never used it, I'm not going to talk about it, actually. I'm going to let the guy, we interviewed the guy a couple of years back on the show, one of the guys who actually founded this app. It was built by a couple of guys in Denmark, and they put it together. Here he is telling Tech Talk a couple of years back about what the app is and how people can use it.
The concept is really simple. I have noticed that a lot of my blind friends in Denmark here, they have an iPhone, and we came up with this idea that you should be able to get a volunteer to be your eyes. Most apps you have one person using, but here we have to connect two live persons at the same time, and that makes it a little bit difficult. But the thing is that when you are standing as a blind person in your kitchen and you have these two cans and you want to have a tomato soup, but you don't know which one is tomato, then you can launch our app on your phone, and you have this one button you have to press. You press one button, and then your phone is sending a signal to a server, and that server will pick a random helper speaking the same language, and then if that helper accepts the call, we make a video connection so that the camera that's facing away from you is turned on, and then the sighted helper can, on his or her iPhone, see what you are pointing at with your phone. And then the person can say, oh, you have to turn the can a little bit around so I can see the text on the other side. And he can say, please move the camera a little closer and so on. And then, it's tomato or it's whatever it is.
That's it in a nutshell. I mean, that is the app, and it is brilliant to use. We all use it here, don't we?
Well, I've got to admit, I haven't used it in a long time. Now, when it was first released, I was all over it. I thought it was really useful. And it is. Don't get me wrong. It is really useful. But for the use case that I need, I found that artificial intelligent apps such as Seeing AI have sort of been enough. But for those situations where it isn't and I actually need a live pair of eyes, then I don't think there's anything better than Be My Eyes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I don't think the developer wants to hear this, but I do use Be My Eyes nowadays as a last resort. If I can't find another app to find the product that I want or to use it the way I need it to, I will break down and use Be My Eyes, but typically I can use something like Seeing AI and...
Break down and use
well, seems a little bit harsh.
That's a little bit harsh. That's probably not the right wording because you're right, Sean, the way you said it, you know, Be My Eyes is a fantastic app. It's a fantastic service. The volunteers are great. There's actually, I don't remember what the numbers are, but there's actually more volunteers than there are blind users of the app. So that makes it really nice. You rarely have to wait for anybody when you dial in. So it is a very nice app. It's a very nice service. But like you said, Sean, there's other apps that I can use now that do a good job at identifying things and helping me figure things out. Or I might have someone around that can help me more quickly than dialing in on an app like that. But the times that I do need to use the service, it is absolutely great.
Yeah, in terms of the numbers, you're right, Tim. I mean, 1.5 million, just over that, volunteers.
Wow, that's amazing.
It is.
But hang on, 1.5 million volunteers, 88,000 people who have blind or low vision that have, admitted. sounds different, doesn't it? Disclosed that to the app. It's really out of whack, isn't it? And that's why I'm keen to talk about it, because I don't think enough people do know about these things.
Let me just say, I did mention the other apps there, the Seeing AI specifically, just because I think it's a different use case. There's lots of times where something's got a font that isn't quite standard. You know, it may be a cursive font or a pretty font on a package or whatever. And that's where Be My Eyes makes a huge difference. And the times I have used it, the volunteer, the quality of the volunteers, because these aren't paid or anything. That's the whole point of being a volunteer. But the quality of them, they've always been great. They've always been polite, friendly, and just they've been helpful. And, you know, what more can you ask from an app that's free like this? It's programmed and coded really well. It's so usable. And I've always got it on my phone. I think, you know, if you are visually impaired, you should always have an app like this on your phone.
Yeah, that's exactly how I would pitch it. I mean, it's almost like we're apologetic that we use Seeing AI from time to time. You know, we shouldn't be, because, no. You know, the way I look at it is it's tools in a toolbox.
Exactly.
And, you know, we really have got a lot of tools now we can use. This, I would say, is one which is really useful to have. I mean, if you're in a difficult situation, I don't know if anyone's used it this way, but I always imagine if you're in a difficult situation and you're nervous about something in your environment and you can just sort of quickly get onto this, you know, am I in the right place? Should I be getting the heck out of here as soon as possible? Then, you know, that's good for that. I think that would be brilliant, because
Absolutely.
It just gives you live eyes. I mean, I suppose you can say, well, I've got FaceTime, so I could do this with FaceTime. Well, yeah, you can, but it's that dependency thing. With this, it doesn't feel like you're being dependent, because those people have volunteered to give their time, as opposed to, oh, I can't do it just now, says your brother or sister. You know, it always feels like it's you're a bit of a burden, whereas this doesn't make you feel like that. And, you know, because it's worldwide, there are people generally awake at all times of day and night. I know I've tried. And I use it a lot. I mean, when I buy, one thing I found it really useful for, and almost a bit emotional, was when I went to buy a birthday card for my wife. And for the first time in a long time, I was able to know what I'd given her in terms of the card, what the words were, and to be able to go through the cards and know that, you know, the card fitted. This year, for my wife's birthday, the card I got her, it just really felt like the right card,
yes.
As opposed to last year, which was an anniversary card. You know, that happened. So, wow. You know, it's really nice just to be able to have the option. And I think it's a brilliant app. It's so simple. The easiest app in the world to use, really. I mean, there's one button on it, which is just get help or get assistance. Once you've signed up, and when I say sign up, I don't think, from my memory, you don't put any information in. It's just, you know, are you blind or partially sighted, or do you want to be a volunteer? And interestingly, I know a lot of VI people who've signed up as volunteers, which I always find rather interesting. How does that
Interesting's
work?
Interesting's an interesting word there. A VI volunteer.
What is that? Okay. What's that I'm looking at? I have no idea.
I don't know.
But I think it's a good app to have, and I think we should absolutely champion it. And that's exactly what's kind of happened here with AbilityNet, the UK organisation. They every year have their Tech for Good Awards. That's Tech number four, Tech for Good Awards. And this is a fantastic way of kind of highlighting this work. And I'm sure those guys were so pleased to know that the Blind and Partially Sighted people thought enough of them to vote them for this award. So well done to them for it. You can get the app for free. This is what's wonderful about it. Everything about this service is free because everyone who's taking part is volunteering. The app is free to download on both iPhone and Android.
Yep.
It only came out recently on Android, if I'm right in saying.
I missed that. I didn't even know. So that's even, I mean, that's even better.
Yeah.
You're hitting the whole community. I am slightly, the low numbers of the people using it actually is slightly concerning. I'm surprised by that. I thought loads of people would at least have it on their device.
Yeah, I wonder if that's to do with people either A, not knowing about it, or B, being nervous to use it, because it is a stranger, even though they're volunteers around the world, you know, and there are ways you can report people if they have been inappropriate, although you don't usually hear any stories like that.
No, I've not.
Which is interesting. You would think with that many volunteers, there could be the occasional problem, but you don't hear about stuff like that in the blind community. But I don't know if that's due to just people not being aware of it or just being too nervous to use it or both.
Couple of things to say about using this app. First of all, when the camera is activated, it's the camera on the rear of the phone, not the one that's on the front where the screen is. So you're always, the person who is seeing out of your camera will be seeing whatever you're pointing that camera at. I would say what I do when I tend to use it, unless I'm out and about, it doesn't matter so much, but when I'm in the house, I always try and keep away from documents or paperwork. You know, If you're like me and you live in an absolute pigsty in my little room in my house that I have all my stuff in, there's stuff everywhere. And I try to make sure that, you know, the bank details aren't lying around. And I think it's also about making sure you don't ask them to read personal information. You know, like I got...
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it's up to you. It's up to you what you want to give them to read. But I think, you know, don't give them, you know, oh, this is your new PIN for your new card ending this number. Don't
well,
do
it's
that.
Up to you, though, isn't it? I mean, that's not a negative against this app at all. It's just about you know, being sensible with what information you share with a stranger.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's a brilliant app, and I want to, you know, tell people it's great to use. We've all had great experiences with it. But, you know, tell us what you think, because I'd be very interested to hear your thoughts on Be My Eyes and other apps like it. I agree. I agree with both of you, actually. It's a tool in the toolbox. It's not something that would be the pinnacle or the one above the other.
Yeah, it doesn't suit every case.
No.
But, you know, it's so good. It works so well. Get it.
Absolutely. Well, well done to them. We're going to move on now because it's time for this.
News from the internet.
Yes, news time. And bad news for Google. Well, actually, do you know what? Good news and bad news for Google this week. I'll start with the bad news, because then we can end on a high. The bad news is that they've been hit with a £3.8 billion fine by the EU for abusing control of the Android operating system. Wow.
Now then, abusing control, what does that actually mean?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Sean, because I'll tell you. Well, basically, it's all to do with competition. Really. And you know, one of the issues that we're hearing a lot about with all of these companies now is they're all trying to force you and well, you, I guess, as a consumer, but, you know, forcing companies as well who are part of the Google infrastructure or whatever to sort of go their way. We saw this with Microsoft and Internet Explorer. Remember that whole thing around when you had to choose your browser because you could no longer have Internet Explorer as the official one? So Google have been accused here and it's been found guilty of being a bit too dominant in some areas. I think abuse is a horrible word to use here for this. Google does plan to appeal against the decision, though, and you would argue that it is a much more open system than Apple's is. I mean, arguably, Apple are far more dominant in that way. But, you know, I suppose that's kind of how it's been sold. Whereas I think, perhaps thinking about it, Google has been seen or wanted to be seen as an open environment, but actually it's not been so much.
No, it's absolutely ridiculous. I totally disagree with it. Total nonsense. They're giving away an operating system for free to manufacturers. That's why you've got an abundance of Android devices out there. Here you are, we've done all the work. Here's a free operating system to put on your devices. Oh, but if you do use it, then you've got to use Google Search or Google Play Store, or, you know, you've got to use that when you ship it. There is absolutely nothing wrong with that business model, I don't think. You're getting something for nothing with the caveat of we want you to pre-install our service. I don't think there's a problem with that. Like you said, Android is so customizable. That's one of the main points about it. You can have a default mail app, a default web browser. You can change that to whatever you want. You can't do that on Apple. I think this is terrible. I think Google should appeal, and I think they're doing nothing wrong. There, I've said it, and I'm an EU lawyer. No, I'm not.
Is that your new job, is it? Right, okay. Yes.
Yeah, his new job. No, but I think you're right in the sense, Sean, that if they're going to go after Google for this, then why in the world aren't they going after Apple? Because you're right. At least on an Android phone, you can change those defaults. You can make a different default browser or mail client, where on an Apple device, you just have to use the app. Now, it's not necessarily a open this by default necessarily.
Well, that's not strictly true. I mean, on the iPhone, you can have Mozilla, or you can have, you know, Firefox or Chrome. And you don't really get a default browser, do you? I mean,
well, what happens when you click on a link in, say, iMessages? Where does it open?
It opens in Safari, which is the default browser.
You've got no choice.
But can't you change that? Can't
no.
you?
No. On an iPhone, you cannot change that. So if you click a link anywhere else, if it's on, on something like iMessage or an email, it automatically opens it in Safari, and that cannot be changed. Which is why I think this whole thing is interesting, because on Android phones, you can change it to Firefox or something else, and bypass that. So that might be Google's ace in the hole here, that they can say, but we give our consumers the option to make that change, unlike Apple, who doesn't let you do that.
Okay. Well, the good news for Google is that I've helped a little bit towards paying off their fine by buying a Google Chromebook this week. That was something I got. I actually got it last week because of a certain shop that exists online that tends to work with big factories. Was having a bit of a day where it was selling things.
Oh, come on. This is so cryptic.
Yeah.
Can we not just say it?
It's never cryptic at all, is it?
Let's just say they were in the height of their season, and I decided to get myself a Chromebook.
They were in their prime, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. That's a good word for it. Yeah, that's a good word for it. So, yeah, I got myself a Chromebook, £99. I mean, you can't argue with that, can you?
Bargain. I saw that one. I was tempted myself, yeah.
But I thought, I'm getting this. It was an Asus. It's rugged, which means that it'll last the test of time with me, which is good news. But it's a lovely little machine. ChromeVox on it is good. I mean, the setup was fantastic. And I mean, it's an 11.6-inch screen. The screen's not actually too bad in the sense that it's quite bright. It's a lot brighter than I thought it was. The last time I saw it was actually in the store. And obviously, these stores have got big, big, powerful lights, so I think it probably didn't showcase it as well. Yeah. But even still, I could see nothing on it, so it makes no difference to me whatsoever. I just turn the brightness down to zero if I can. But no, it's very nice. A little bit sluggish at times. I'm going to get in touch with Google about this, because I don't know if that's a processor thing, if it's a sound card thing, if it's if it's just ChromeVox itself. I didn't experience that with my own built version.
That's because that's running some serious hardware, though. See, that's a problem for me. Even if it's £99, yeah, if the performance or response time is sluggish, I'm not going to use it. So I'd rather spend a little bit more and get that performance.
Hmm. Well, I got it. So, you know, for £99, it's great. I'm happy with it. Uber are in the news this week, and that's because of what's been happening in London. The Transport for London people have been saying that Uber is not fit for purpose as a taxi company. And one thing they've been trying to do is stop them getting a licence. Well, that's been overturned, and Uber does now have a licence. But one thing they have said is that they will introduce a phone number in the UK. Now, that's not really what Uber's all about. It's all about using your smartphone and using the app. But one of the arguments that has been made by Transport for London is you're not a proper taxi company if you don't have a phone number. So they are introducing this. Now, primarily, it's to report any serious incidents and anything that happens. I mean, it's specifically for Uber to do that, I guess. But it's also for people to have a point of contact. I think this is a good thing, but I think for us, this could be even better, because it means that we then have a way. I mean, if this is just in London, and I'm not sure if that's the case or whether it's all of the UK. It says introduced in UK, but I don't know if that's specific to a place. But it's interesting to read that, because I think, well, I'd quite like that, because one of the things I've always wanted to do is be able to explain that I've got a visual impairment, I have a white cane, and that's often quite difficult to do. I think from friends of mine who use Uber, they often say what they will do is they will text the driver. Maybe that's one way of doing it.
That was my whole point. Yeah, you can actually contact and talk to the driver through the app anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how well that always works. And I'll be honest, when I'm standing on Euston Road in London trying to get a taxi, or an Uber, as the case may be, I find that a bit of a faff, to be honest. So, you know, maybe there's ways around it. Greg in Pennsylvania had been in touch. He had said that he used this, what do they call it again? Text replacement, that's what it's called, text replacement, yep. Where you can just type in a couple of letters and it'll fire out some information. So he's given me an idea about that one.
What idea?
You know, to just put like, you know, I am a visually impaired person and I'm standing with a white cane.
Oh, I see. Yes. Yeah, that makes sense. I'd be interested actually to hear from our listeners who Uber regularly. I've only used it once or twice. The first time was okay. Actually, the first time was with you, Stephen.
I was going to say it was well, and we get taken to a very dark alley.
Yes.
Remember that?
The advice given was, well, actually, you should always arrange a pickup in a back alley or a back street. Oh, well, that's great advice. That's very safety conscious.
Yeah, two guys, let's just say well-built, that we are, you know, that's one thing. But, you know, I wouldn't like to be, you know, an 18-year-old girl trying to get home being told that
exactly.
Information.
I'm not quite sure how well it works. The second experience I had, I tried to order one coming back from a restaurant, and as soon as I text the driver saying, I'm visually impaired, it was cancelled. I never heard anything back. So I'm not sure quite how reliable they are. So I would like to hear from people that do use them regularly.
And that is kind of the problem with the culture at Uber. I know they've said in the last couple of years they're trying to change that. But at least here in the States, you hear so many horrible stories about Uber. I mean, there's been issues with them treating guide dogs poorly, similar to how taxi cab services treat guide dogs poorly. I've heard stories about them either refusing service to a guide dog, or in a couple instances out west, I know they actually tried to put a guide dog in the trunk rather than letting them be in the back seat. So those type of issues have happened with Uber. They've claimed that they're trying to clean that up and be a better service when it comes to the disabled or the visually impaired. We have another service here in the States called Lyft, and I have found with my experiences, Lyft is a lot better when it comes to those things than Uber is. And as you said, Stephen, I think it's nice, especially for us, overall it's nice, but for us it's nice to have a phone number for Uber to be able to call them and say, okay, here's an issue, can you put this on my account and flag this saying that I've got a visual impairment, or is there something special I need to do? You know, be able to ask those questions of a person as opposed to trying to take care of that with the driver. That being said, it's easier than that in my opinion, because the Lyft service that I was just talking about, in their app, they actually have an area about accessibility and if you have a disability. And you can flag that to say whether you're in a wheelchair or if you have other special needs. And you can even type in a message describing your situation that, especially like on mine, I have it written in there that I may need assistance finding or navigating to the vehicle when they show up because I'm visually impaired. And I've never had a problem. Whenever anybody pulls up, if I'm by myself, they will, you know, park the car, get out, you know, and they'll ask me if I need any help, and they'll try to guide me over. So I think that something as simple as that within the app could go a long way. But again, I'm not going to complain about a phone number to call either.
No, and it doesn't look like I'll come anywhere near you anytime soon, Tim. I don't think it sounds like this has been orchestrated a bit by the people at Transport for London. I think it's a good thing. Even if you, well, arguably, it lets people use the system who might not have before. That's one way to look at it.
It's trying to get a new way of thinking, the new way of taxi and private hire. It's trying to drag it back to the old ways of taxiing, which are just terrible. It's trying to drag a new service back to the old ways, and I think it's a bad idea if they're trying to force them that you got to have a telephone number. Of course, you should have a point of contact, but do that through the app. Maybe have a telephone number, but don't force them to do it just because that's the way we've been doing it for years. Terrible
idea.
You're
so Mr. Modern, aren't you? Right, okay. this is a guy. This is a guy who eats lamb chops by the truckload from
an
Indian.
Every episode, we get lamb chops in there. I don't know who's got the problem, me or you?
I think it's you. Right, okay.
It's me. Yeah.
When you have so many that you've lost count, I think it's a problem.
And you know, this is, I mean, it's okay to eat lamb chops. There's nothing wrong with lamb chop, but not 101 night or whatever it is you eat.
They're nice. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about a microwave.
He has no defense. Moving on.
Yeah, let's talk about food. GE Appliances in the States have launched or are launching a new microwave. Now, I must say, when we talk a lot about appliances in the kitchen or in the home, we tend to think, oh, inaccessible, not going to work. Well, this one isn't built to be accessible to blind people, but it does it has the potential for it because it's got Lady A built in, our Amazon Echo lady. And this is called the Smart Countertop Microwave with Scan to Cook.
Mm.
Now, I've not used a scanner for years. Yes, Scan to Cook. This is where it scans barcodes on the meal and therefore knows how to cook them. I like the sound of this.
I really like the sound of this, being able to not only talk to the microwave and have Lady A talk back so you can actually ask for specific cook times and things like that, and it will just do it based on you commanding it with your voice and give you that audible feedback that Lady A does. But yeah, the scannable barcode system with it. And they said their library of food isn't that large. I think it's like 3,000 products or something right now, but they are increasing that library of barcodes, you know, over time. Just to be able to scan the barcode on a package, on a frozen meal or something like that, and it'll automatically know, okay, cook it for this, and then maybe, you know, like Lady A, almost said it, Lady A will alert you, okay, you need to take it out and stir it, and then put it back in, and it'll automatically do the next set of time if there is, you know, that for that package. To be able to do all of that and have it telling you what it is and doing it all automatically, I think it's fantastic. And I know you haven't gotten to it yet, Stephen, but the price point was shocking to me. It was just so wonderful. So yeah, I really like this product.
Now I'm interested in the price point. What price point are we talking?
Well, it's coming in at $139. So what's that in pounds?
120 quid, £110. That's not bad.
It's more expensive than a microwave you'll get in your local supermarket.
Right, but nowhere near the cost of the usual talking microwaves that are usually $350 to $400.
Yeah, that is a good point. I'd be interested to see when it's, or even if it's going to hit the UK, though. Is that been confirmed, or do we know?
No, we don't know at the moment, but, you know, like most of these things, it'll tend to kick off. The Americans get a chance to play with it first.
Of course they do.
Find out all the problems, and then we get it when it works. That's usually how it goes.
We're just beta testers, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this. Okay, I'm not a fan of this idea. There, I've said it.
Oh, come on.
I've said it.
Well, that's because you don't microwave anything, you just get takeaway.
No, that's a lie. I live off ready meals.
No,
the
I know
thing,
you do.
The thing is, look, it sounds great in theory, but as you said, Tim, the database isn't extensive, and I can guarantee you it never will be. Unless this feature becomes standard on every microwave, then this database is always, you're going to be, one thing from a VI point of view, trying to find a barcode is always a nightmare, okay? So it's pointless from that point of view. Once you get a barcode, if that food item isn't in the database, then it's going to be useless anyway. So for me, I think that's a bit of a gimmick. The barcode scanning system, I think we've seen it before on a few different things, and it never works well. If it's got Alexa... Oh, I said it.
Oh, you said it. If it's got, that's it. A long time.
We need some sort of forfeit here. If it's got Lady A built in, that's different. If I can just say, Lady A, full power, 5 minutes, or Lady A, how much time's left. That's all I need. That would be fantastic, and I would buy it for that alone. But the barcode feature, pointless.
Okay. No, I'm shocked, Tim, quite frankly.
I'm very shocked, because I wouldn't call it pointless, because how many other barcode scanner apps do we use? And they're constantly updating those databases. There's websites like Directions for Me that have all this information and that they're constantly updating. You partner with the right people, manufacturers, grocers, things like that, department stores. And it's not hard. It's already being done. There are many databases out there of these products already. It's just a matter of GE getting that updated and getting the man hours to put into it.
Which won't happen.
You tell them, Tim.
You said the point there. How many of these barcode apps do we use? Well, none, because we try them out. We think, these are going to be great. And they are all terrible and we never use them. Bang. There we go.
Coming from the man who just said a moment ago that he loves seeing AI. Wait a minute.
Not the barcode feature. The barcode feature is terrible.
I use the barcode feature of seeing AI constantly. I used to use several other apps.
Fake news.
One is called, it's not fake news. The databases are pretty good as long as you can find the barcode. And I grant you that is sometimes difficult to find one, but they're usually in about the same place on most products, on the box or the can. But once you found that barcode, I don't ever usually have a problem finding it in the database.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Oh, well, look, sorry. Calm down.
This news segment's really got me annoyed this week.
And this is awkward. You and I don't fight, Sean. It's supposed to be you and Stephen that fight, not you.
I'll leave you for 1 week.
This isn't right.
And this is what happens. Right. Okay. We are going to move on because I can't take any more. And we're going to welcome Chris back to the show. Hello, Chris.
Hey, what have Chris. I walked into? Guys, separate. Come on now.
That's why I ask every week.
Hi, guys. Great to be back. Thanks for having me once more.
So you had a baby.
I did have a baby.
Tell us more.
Her name's Jessica Jane Wallace. She is adorable when she's not screaming in my face.
That's what we say about Stephen.
She resembles Stephen in so many ways. The way they both suck their thumb on a daily basis is
get gurney.
I get gurney all the time. But she is absolutely adorable. I'm very, very happy. Very tired, though. So
congratulations. It doesn't get any easier.
No, you're going to be tired now for a long time.
I came in for a little bit of comfort here. Come on, guys.
Well, listen, Tim's daughter, Alyssa, was six. When was she six?
This is past week on the 19th.
Wow, congratulations to you too. Happy birthday, Alyssa. Yeah,
thank you.
And, Sean's kids are, they're just
adults.
They're adults.
I'm an
now.
old man. I'm still getting sleepless nights.
Well, I've been told that it won't ever let up. It'll go from, making sure she's still alive and breathing while she sleeps, through to making sure she's able to sleep, through to wondering where the hell she is.
Yep.
It's 10 o'clock, she's not home yet. So I've got to look forward to.
And then, who's this guy? all that to come. What a joy. Right, anyway, on with this.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
Oh, yes, we do.
Here's your mail today.
Right, time for the mail then. Chris, great to be back. Right, what's your first or our first email then?
Well, our first email comes from Wayne, who says, "Hi, gang. Just following on from your rotor access bit on the Chit Chat podcast, I think Tim touched on it when he said the forefinger, middle finger are the best approach to use. Unfortunately, Tim has a massive finger, so couldn't use this particular approach. I suppose he could use it as a martial arts weapon in other circumstances. Everyone else, though, should be fine. I find that if you rest the forefinger and the middle finger on the screen and use a form of moonwalking movement, the rotor moves smoothly. So the idea is to rest the fingers on the screen and then slide the forefinger up and the middle finger down at the same time. These only need to be small movements, not large sweeping motions. You'll find with practice there is very fluid and rapid rotor change, as Tim was saying. It gives you a very clear action. Also, I was wondering about how many people are using the handwriting mode in the rotor settings. I use it all the time for launching apps. For example, you can simply put one finger on the screen to focus VoiceOver onto the general screen and then one turn to the right with the rotor to access handwriting mode, provided it's activated on the rotor settings. You can then handwrite the initial letter of the app you want to launch, For example, to launch the podcast app, you would draw the letter P, which brings a list of apps beginning with P onto the screen. You could then draw the letter O to further narrow down the first list of apps. If there is a small number of apps, then I can use to finger flick up or down and double tap on the app I want to launch. It's really a fast way of launching apps rather than flicking through the screen or exploring through touch, unless you have the memory map of where the apps are located. You can also use handwriting for putting text into any text field or to enter the password open on the lock screen. On the lock screen, text is not spoken so that the password is not revealed. Of course, writing mode is great for those who struggle with the on-screen keyboard and can give an alternative text input method where needed. Sorry for the long email. I was just checking how long it takes before you get eye strain, Stephen. Really enjoying the banter and easy chat format. Keep it up, lads. Oh, by the way, Steve, I'm using a 6S and my wife is using an iPhone 6SE. The 6SE is really fast. Sometimes I think it's faster than my iPhone 6S. I think you might have picked up an Android phone by mistake, thinking it's your iPhone. It might be worth you doing a hard reset or just restoring the phone to clear out any old system glitches. As Sean was saying, your iPhone 6SE should be working fine with iOS 11. We have no problems. Thanks again, lads. Best wishes from Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne.
I get around that issue with the eye strain by getting Chris in. That's how that works.
Absolutely. It's a good plan. No, that was a fantastic email. So much to cover there. I, first of all, I didn't realize that my middle finger was a lethal weapon, but that's all I'll say about that. But no, I'm glad that that worked for Wayne, that he was able to figure out the rotor, because the rotor can be very helpful once you find a way to make it work for you and be able to get access to all those different functions and get it to it quickly. And as far as the handwriting mode, I have used it. I don't use it probably as much as I should, but like you said in the email, it is very helpful for finding apps quickly on your home screen. And the part that I really like the most, and I've done this from time to time, if I don't have a Bluetooth in or headphones in and I need to unlock my screen, being able to put in the passcode with handwriting mode does make it more secretive so people don't hear what your code is as you're typing it in. So that can be a useful way to do that so that you don't have VoiceOver giving away your passcode.
Well, look out for a feature next week with Tim's explanation of the handwriting mode. Thanks, Tim.
I thought Wayne did, but okay.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant feature. I use it quite a lot, not as much as I probably would like to. I kind of forget about it from time to time. There are so many features, but it is a good one. And also the point about the rotor is good. You know, having the you can do it different ways. I mean, essentially, as long as you have one finger on the screen, the other finger can do the work on the rotor. So, like, you know, like Wayne said there, you know, you hold the finger down, say your right index finger on the screen, and your left index finger just runs up and down the screen, that will change the rotor. This is something we've been talking about, actually, on the show the past couple of weeks, is how to do it more simply. There doesn't seem to be any touch accommodations for it. In the settings, there are lots of touch accommodation options, but nothing that makes it any easier for you if you have issues with touchscreen, especially kind of using it almost like a, I always think it's like putting a screw in, you know, that kind of way of, you know, but using your two fingers.
I find that the easiest way to do it.
It is easy, yeah, but it depends on who you are and depends on
exactly
capability
exactly
and all that.
Right.
Okay, right, what's next?
Well, our next email comes from Kieran. He says, hi, folks. Firstly, thanks for a great show.
You're welcome.
I've been listening for over a year and have found it really informative as well as enjoyable. I'm sighted, but my wife is blind with virtually no functional vision. She uses an iPad with VoiceOver for listening to books, social media, etc., and is currently learning to use a Bluetooth keyboard with VoiceOver. When she's out and about, she uses an old Nokia with talks for calls and texts. She needs a new phone before the old one dies on her, but doesn't want to have to bring a separate keyboard with her. She only intends to use the phone for calls and texts. Do you know if the new banana phone, the Nokia 8110, has speech available? Alternatively, has anyone experience with the BlackBerry Key 1 or Key 2 that run Android? Or are there any other phones she should consider? Thanks for your help with this, and keep up the good work with the show. Best regards from Kieran.
Okay, Kieran, well, I can tell you straight off the bat, because I went out and bought a brand new Nokia 3310, purely because it was on sale, and secondly because...
Of course.
Yeah, of course it was. But secondly, because I wanted to see if there was anything in there around accessibility, and the short answer is no, nothing. I have to say I'm quite disappointed by that. Nokia didn't have accessibility built in anyway on their phones at that point anyway, so they've even brought in that as a retro feature. We didn't have accessibility then either. But it's not got anything in it at all, and you can't even enlarge the text on the screen. It's very, very small. So that would be out of it. BlackBerry Key One, though, guys, I think these must be accessible through the Android TalkBack operating
Talkback feature,
that must work, and of course you've got the keyboard as well.
I would hope so, but you know, the whole BlackBerry thing, I'm never quite sure how stable that is as a company.
It's Alcatel, isn't it? The company that owns Alcatel that owns them now, so I think it's a bit more firm than it was.
Yeah, you're right. It's just something makes me uneasy about recommending BlackBerry. I just never quite sure how long they're going to stay around. But yeah, look, it's an option. Definitely check it out. But I would be tempted to say, you know, just go with any Android phone, which is, you know, it's going to have the TalkBack feature enabled.
But it's the keyboard, though. It's the keyboard that we're talking about.
Yeah, the trouble with that is, you know, it's going to get more and more difficult to find phones with keyboards because they are just dying out. Touchscreen is the way it's going.
Because I know there's the Capsys phone, isn't there?
We have mentioned them before. I haven't tried one. Maybe one of our listeners out there can chime in with this. It is difficult. I would be tempted to say, you know, get in contact with the Tech for Life team at RNIB or maybe even a company like Computer Room Services.
Agreed. I think that some sort of specialized service will be the best way to find out more information about this, because those BlackBerry phones are going to be good for having that actual physical keyboard. But TalkBack is tricky, and the Android system is tricky because, as we've talked about on prior episodes, because there's so many versions of Android and so many different phones, you can get a different experience at times with those phones. And TalkBack may be available. It might not be available. And most of the time it is. But then the experience could be different, and even the gestures could be different. So it'd be something that maybe, you know, check with BlackBerry and make for certain if that is going to be available. But yeah, like we've talked about in the past, there are other third-party options that might be more specific to your needs.
The Capsys one that I'm thinking about, that has the standard 1-2-3 keyboard.
Yeah.
You know, there's a name for it. Is it T9, they call it?
Yes.
Which is just like a normal, or not a normal phone these days, but a old phone these days, I suppose. And that was okay if that's what you want to do, because you can do text on that and all of that, and you've got Android in it. But if you want a full keyboard, full QWERTY keyboard, then you would want the BlackBerry. That is a good option for that, actually, so that might be worth looking into. But it will, if it's Android, it will have the accessibility in it, that's for sure. What the experience is like, yeah, you'll find out. Right, what else have you got?
Well, our next email comes from Billy, and he felt the need to write in following a listener's comment that you guys should stop talking so much nonsense. Billy says, "Hi, Stephen, Sean and Tim. Like many other people, I'm sure, I quite enjoy the banter between you and your co-presenters, which is usually balanced with the tech info and news that we are all interested in. So, as far as I'm concerned, carry on as you are."
Excellent.
Thank you, Billy.
Thank you. I quite like the phrase, quite enjoy, and usually balanced. That's the key words for me. Thank you.
Well, Billy continues, "I have mentioned before that I am not an expert by any standards when it comes to using my iPhone, and I've tried a few times to make a recording using the Voice Memos app. However, I always seem to get a lot of voice over direction included in the recordings, usually due to my searching around for the pause or stop buttons when finished recording. How can I avoid doing this or remove them afterwards? I tried searching through your list of podcasts for the demo Sean did on Voice Memos, but I haven't been able to locate it. Do you know what number episode it is so I can try searching again? Thanks for a great show and keep up the good work. Best regards, Billy Burrell."
Well, you know what, Billy? I'll send you a link because it's probably easier. It's in there somewhere. That's all I know. It's deep down the list now, I imagine, with all the other stuff on top of it. But no, if you search for, if you go into Audioboom's website and search for how to record using your iPhone, that is what it's called, so you would find it there. One tip I would give you, Billy, is stick a pair of earphones in. You will, of course, transfer, if it's a pair of headphones with a microphone in it, you'll transfer the recording to the mic in the earphones. That's right, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, that will stop all the voiceover stuff.
Yeah, you'll only get the voiceover in your ears. It won't be on the recording. Even if the headphones don't have a microphone in them, you can still use the phone mic and you will not get the voiceover in there anyway. But one thing I will say, don't worry about it too much, because if you send in some audio, we will clean it up and get rid of any of that. So don't worry about it too much if you've got the odd stop button voiceover command in there. It's absolutely fine. It's your audio we're interested in and we'll clean it up if it needs it.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, if you do think, hang on, people are sending in beautifully polished pieces of audio, that's not often the case. People are just sending in audio, and we do clean it up a bit for air. So, I mean, when I say clean it up, I don't mean we take out any dodgy language. I mean, people are very kind. They're very nice people.
Sometimes.
But that's just us. We have to clean that out for ourselves. Right, I think we've got time for one more.
Okay, well, our final email then is from Paul. He says, I'm the rapidly balding guy with the SanDisk wireless stick, which now spends most of its time in the junk drawer.
Oh, no.
Am I right to believe that I need to use my Mac to put files onto it? If so, that's a problem for me, as I'm a complete novice on it. Would you especially, Sean, mind doing a feature on it? Sean does such clear and easy-to-follow instructions. Keep up the good work on what must be the best tech podcast for the partially sighted and blind community. Regards, Paul McCollum.
Oh, Paul.
Wow, thank you.
Flattery gets you everywhere. Right, Sean, get on with it.
Well, I would do, except I don't own that device. It's you or Tim, I'm afraid.
So, just buy one. They're not that expensive. Get one.
Oh, okay. Buy me one and I'll get it done. As far as I know, it's just a USB pen drive, right? So, yes, you do need to copy the files across using, you know, your computer, Mac or Windows. So, yes, it should be pretty straightforward. It's just a case of copy and paste. We will see what we can do. I'm sure we can put a feature together with that.
Yeah, I don't think that'll be too difficult. We can come up with something, but very honestly, it's just like any other USB, you know, pen drive or thumb drive, where when you plug it in, it does come up as if it were another drive on your computer, and you do literally just copy what files you want from your computer to that drive. There are folders pre-made in the drive or on the drive. So there's a music folder, videos folder, things like that. You can use those folders or create your own. So it works very similar to any other kind of file creation or file movement that you would do on your computer. It is very, very easy.
Okay. Well, we've just got time for one more bit of a comment, Chris.
Well, since we're talking about USBs, I've spotted that Billy in his previous email has a PS which says, Sheila's piece on USB fans made me think of a joke I heard a while back. Two wind turbines are standing in the North Sea when one turns to the other and says, if we're going to be working together, we may as well get to know each other. So what kind of music do you like? The second one turns to the first and replies, well, I'm a big heavy metal fan. Ba-dum bum.
Oh, I get it.
Thank you so much, Billy. Nice. And that's it for our show. It's great to be back. And Chris, good to have you back as well.
Pleasure, sir.
Sean and Tim, thanks as always. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.